and welcome to episode 142 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and it has been a wild week or so since we last spoke. The Rangers have played 7 times in the last 11 days. It'll be 8 times in 13 days by the time the puck drops Thursday night in Boston, and that span of 7 games includes games played in 4 different cities and 2 sets of back-to-back. So I'm feeling a little tired right now. I have no doubt that the Rangers are feeling a little bit tired right now, and you guys have had quite a bit of hockey to watch in the last 11 days or so. Now, it's been a pretty successful run overall, you have to say. The Rangers ended up winning 5 out of these last 7 games since the trade deadline, which is a very strong showing, all things considered. Some very good wins mixed in there as well. I think back to that 1-0 shutout win in Carolina last Tuesday. That was a huge win for the Rangers when you think about the implications in the standings. Now, the Hurricanes have been charging. They have won 4 in a row since that loss to the Rangers. So they're still at this point sitting 2 points back from the Rangers for first place in that Metro division. But had the Rangers not come away with that 1-0 shutout win last week, essentially you'd look at it as a tie right now. So that was a big win for them, at least if you care a lot about first place. I think you can make an argument about whether that really matters. I think the Rangers would like to win it, but I don't know if they see it as a top priority. But I know for a lot of people, it's a point of pride, it's a point of emphasis, and the Rangers are still holding on to that lead. Really gutsy win, I thought, especially considering they had played a game the previous night against the New Jersey Devils at Madison Square Garden, then had to get on a plane, fly to Raleigh, and play a game against a really, really tough competitor the very next day. Igor Shesterkin was outstanding in that game, but the Rangers also, I thought, did a pretty good job defensively of limiting the Hurricanes. We know they're a high shot volume team, and they didn't have a whole ton of shots and definitely not a whole ton of high quality shots in that game. So a really strong defensive game for the Rangers. And then as that week went on, you saw the offense start to open up for them. Now, in some games, it cost them defensively. Like you look at that Saturday win in Pittsburgh, the Rangers went off and scored 7 goals in that game, but they also allowed 4. And I think the feeling in the locker room afterwards, and definitely my feeling from watching the game, was that they were way too loose defensively after it seemed like the games earlier in the week, they had been really tight in that area, especially when it came to limiting the turnovers that fuel odd man rushes going the other way. That seems to be an issue that kind of comes and goes for this team. We saw an extended stretch in the middle of the season where they really struggled with that. It felt like they had cleaned it up for, you know, a pretty lengthy period before and right after the trade deadline. But now the last few games, it's crept back in there. But after they come off that win over Pittsburgh on Saturday, which came after a loss in Tampa, which at the time was the only loss of the week. The Tampa Bay Lightning, by the way, I wrote this that night. Right now, the Rangers would be in line to play them in the first round of the playoffs. And I think of all the potential first round opponents out there, whether you're talking about Philly, Detroit, the Islanders, even the Capitals somehow have hung around in this playoff race. I'd rather see any of those teams over the Tampa Bay Lightning. So when we talk about how important is it to take first place, you know, maybe that's part of this equation as well. Obviously, you know, the players will tell you, the coaches will tell you that you have to go through everybody, you have to beat the best to be the best, and they're not going to harp too much on who their first round matchup is. But I think with that loss in Tampa on Thursday reminded everybody is that Tampa is still formidable, especially when they have their star players going, because they have that firepower up front with Braden Point, who was the best player on the ice that night, Nikita Kucherov, who's a Hart Trophy candidate right now, Steven Stamkos is still a dangerous player, Anthony Cirelli, you got Victor Hedman on the blue line, and even though he's having a down season, I still think Andrei Vasilevskiy would have to scare you in any kind of a playoff series given his track record. So a lot of things there about the Lightning that I came out of that trip to Tampa thinking, you know, these guys are still a scary opponent for sure. That was the one loss on that road trip. Then again, they win in Pittsburgh and then they come home for Sunday. And Sunday, I thought, might have been their most complete win of that grueling week. They beat the Islanders by a score of 5-2, and really everything was going well for them in that game. The 5-on-5 offense, all 5 goals came at 5-on-5, and what we're seeing recently, which I think is really encouraging for the Rangers, is it's not just Panarin scoring all the time. Mika Zibanejad has certainly woken up with 3 goals in the last handful of games, and a couple of those goals coming at 5-on-5 to sort of quiet that chatter for at least a little while. But you're also seeing Alexi Lafreniere. To me, he has been absolutely one of the play drivers for this team lately. He's had an outstanding season all around, but he's up to 20 goals now. And one of the most noticeable guys for me in a lot of these recent games. You've got Kaapo Kakko starting to contribute on the scoring sheet a little more. It feels like that bottom six. Will Cooley, another guy, I've been really impressed with him recently. I think he's really come on strong and been much more assertive offensively recently. So getting those contributions from the bottom six, and I believe Cooley, Kakko, and Lafreniere all scored in that win over the Islanders. Plus, we saw the Rangers get back to that tight defensive coverage that we had seen from them in Carolina and seen from them earlier in the week that sort of slipped as the week went on. So an impressive win against the Islanders on Sunday. Again, maybe their best all-around game of the week. And that capped a streak of 5 wins in 6 games for them. Those 6 games are played in a span of 9 days. So you had to come out of that week feeling really good. This week that we're in right now has not gotten off to quite as hot of a start. The Rangers are coming off of a 4-2 loss to the Winnipeg Jets Tuesday night at home. The Jets are another one of those teams. I mean, this schedule has just had one quality opponent after another. The Jets are another one of those teams that watching them play on Tuesday, I came away thinking, wow, this team has a lot of pieces that if you did run into them, obviously for the Rangers, that would mean in a Stanley Cup final. So you'll be happy if you get to that point. But the Jets struck me as a team. You look at Connor Hellebuyck. I was diving into the numbers a bit recently. It's hard not to view him as the Vezina Trophy favorite right now. He has been the best goalie in the league this season, and he was really good against the Rangers on Tuesday night with 38 saves. The Rangers outshot them 40-27, yet Hellebuyck was really good. And Peter Laviolette made a valid point after the game that, yeah, the Rangers had a lot of shots, but he didn't think that enough of those shots were really high danger chances came from those grade A areas of the ice. He felt like there was a little bit too much, maybe from the perimeter, a little bit too much that wasn't super threatening. So that's part of this equation as well. But Hellebuyck was good. There certainly were some breakaways. There certainly were some opportunities where the Rangers really tested him, and he came through for Winnipeg. And then you look at their firepower up front. Mark Scheifele has been a really awesome all-around player for them this season. That's a guy a couple of years ago I remember saying that would be great if the Rangers could ever get their hands on him. He puts up a hat trick. But then you think about what they added at the trade deadline with Monahan and Toffoli, and it just feels like they're really deep up front. They seem to forecheck really hard, defend really hard. It just seems like a team where a lot of things have come together for them this season. So the Rangers eventually sort of run out of gas, I guess you could say, in that game. It felt like the first period was fairly even, but I would have tilted it a little bit in the Rangers' favor. I believe they outshot them 13-7 in that first period, and they definitely had some good scoring chances. It felt like they were playing pretty well. Second period, though, was this lull for the Rangers. And again, in the back of my mind, I can't help but wonder, are those legs starting to feel a little heavy? And there were a couple back-breaking moments in that game, but the most notable for sure, or the most noticeable for sure, came just toward the end of that second period when it felt like the Rangers were dragging. They have the puck in the offensive zone. Keandre Miller kicks it back to Chris Kreider. Kreider momentarily has possession of the puck, but it just looked a little lackadaisical. It just looked like there wasn't a whole lot of urgency there. And Scheifele swoops in, steals the puck right off of Kreider's stick. And then I think what clearly jumped out to me, I think what clearly jumped out to all of us who were watching it live, and certainly the reaction on social media bore this out as well, Kreider just sort of uncharacteristically did not really seem to be busting it back on that forecheck when Scheifele had that breakaway that he converts and ends up putting Winnipeg up 3-1. And that felt like, even though it was only a 2-goal deficit, and we've seen the Rangers overcome worse, given where they were at this point in the season, at this point in the schedule, that 3-1 lead that the Jets had going into the third period. It felt like that was going to be really tough for the Rangers to overcome, a really deflating moment for them at the end of the second period. And even though they made a push, they certainly seemed to up their effort again in the third period, and they end up getting a goal that pulls them to within one with a little less than 2 minutes left from Lafreniere. They just were never able to catch back up, and the Jets ultimately end it with the Scheifele empty netter to complete his hat trick. So the Rangers get a loss there. I know after the game, Peter Laviolette specifically was harping on that second period. He said he felt like they were flat in that second period. We saw him start to juggle the lines, the D pairs, everything in the third period to try to wake his team up. They did seem to get woken up a little bit, but it wasn't quite enough to come back against a quality team like the Jets. And now it doesn't get any easier because the Rangers are traveling to Boston on Thursday. The Bruins, one of the best teams in the league. I believe they have the best record now in the Eastern Conference. They've been hot recently. And then they come home Saturday against the Florida Panthers, who we've talked about before. In my mind, and I think in the mind of a lot of other people, they are probably the favorite in the Eastern Conference right now. So you could argue the Rangers are coming home to play the two best teams in the East. They're going away to play Boston, and then they're coming home to play Florida. So those, I think a lot of people feel like might be the two best teams in the East. So the schedule is just absolutely unrelenting for them right now. And it's not just a matter of playing a lot of games in few days. These are really good teams that they're having to play against right now. And I think that adds to how just like much of a slog it feels like this is for them right now. And listen, at least publicly, you know, in a lot of these interviews that you're seeing on TV and things like that, and the conversations that I've had, they're not using that as an excuse. I think they've all been pretty adamant about that. But I know from being around the team and traveling with them, I mean, I know myself, I'm tired right now and I'm not playing any games. So just for me flying to all these different places and running around and covering all these games, I feel like I'm dragging right now. And I know from talking to some of these guys and just watching what's going on, there are quite a few guys in that locker room who are banged up right now. There are quite a few of them who are feeling run down. I mean, they're finishing this season with 20 games in a span of 38 days. That's more than a game every other day on average. And then rolling right into the playoffs. One player said this to me the other day. I won't say who, but you know, it was a casual conversation. And he looked at me and he's like, who the heck is making this schedule? This just seems crazy. Like, why, from the NHL standpoint, would you want all of these teams that are bracing for the playoffs? And the playoffs are an absolute gauntlet. Like, if you're one of those teams that's going to go on a run and play in multiple rounds and ultimately make the cup final, you know it's basically going to be playing games every other day for a very extended period of time. And I just remember that 2022 Eastern Conference final run that the Rangers had and covering that. And by the time they got to that Eastern Conference final against the Lightning, the team was clearly out of gas. And I think they wore down, and ultimately that caught up to them. And, you know, maybe you could argue that Tampa was the better team. I'm sure in a lot of ways they were that season. But it also felt like the Rangers had so much momentum going for them, and then it just collapsed. And you could just see that they were running on fumes. So it just seems to me unfair to ask them to go through all of this right before the playoffs start, especially when there were other points earlier in the season where they had more days off or they had more lulls. So I bet you if you ask the players, they would prefer a little bit more of a break in the schedule at this point of the year to make sure that they're rested up and healthy and all that going into the playoffs. You know, the thing is, a lot of teams are going through this right now. Like, if you look at some of the Rangers' recent opponents, they're not the only ones who have had a crazy schedule recently. The Jets, who they just played last night, were also coming off of, I think it was 7 games in like 12 days or something like that. So that's why they don't want to use it as an excuse. A lot of teams, again, are in the same boat. But I have written this a few times recently, and I'll repeat it here. I do think the Rangers should be giving serious consideration to picking some spots, whether you want to call it maintenance, rest, load management, whatever, rotate other guys in. Some point, it might not be this month, but especially I think once you get into April, I would absolutely try to pick a spot to give Artemi Panarin a day off. Now, Panarin's a guy who's chasing milestones. He wants to get to 100 points. I'm sure that is going to factor into it. But if you could give a guy like that a rest, Mika Zibanejad, Adam Fox absolutely has been banged up recently. We saw him block a shot, I believe it was in the Pittsburgh game over the weekend, where he was just clearly in so much pain. He's the guy that I would definitely want to give a day off here if I could. Keandre Miller has been logging such heavy minutes. I mean, he seems to be playing pretty well and feeling pretty fresh right now, but just so many guys up and down this lineup. Vincent Trocheck, again, he's a guy that's playing really well, but he's a guy that you really need to be in top form at the playoffs and also logs really heavy minutes for the Rangers. A lot of nights, he leads all forwards in ice time. So there's just, I think, some strategic things that you could do where you could pick spots. And you look at the Rangers roster right now. They've got 13 forwards now that Matt Rempe is back from that suspension. And Peter Laviolette actually hinted at this on Tuesday. He said, I plan on using all 13 forwards down the stretch here. So I do think you're going to see that. Now, a lot of times, it's just going to be a matter of making a decision between Rempe and Johnny Brodzinski, because it seems like there's a little bit of a competition going on between those two for who the 12th forward will be, who that last guy in the lineup will be. The other 11 spots, you know, are pretty much locked in for the playoffs. But I also think that it would be wise, and it seems like Laviolette kind of hinted at this, that there will be spots where he has both Rempe and Brodzinski in the lineup and maybe takes another guy who could use a breather out for a game or two here or there. I'm not saying go multiple games in a row without playing Mika Zibanejad or Chris Kreider or something like that, but I am saying that over the course of those last couple weeks of the season, I think I would pick a day for each one of those guys to maybe get a breather. And I think that that would be wise. And the last thing that you want to see is what happened to the Rangers, specifically Ryan Lindgren, on Sunday. Lindgren goes out with an injury, clearly something with his left leg. He was not putting any weight on that when he came off the ice. Takes a hit along the boards and went down in tremendous pain. The trainer came out right away. It looked really scary. Looking at the replay, it looked like maybe his skate got caught a little bit. The leg got twisted awkwardly. Of course, you're always fearing a knee injury in that situation, but could have been knee, could have been ankle, could have been a lot of different things. The Rangers are obviously just calling it lower body, but just the way that it looked with A, the injury, and then B, the way that he came off the ice, you were fearing for the worst. You were thinking this guy's season might be in jeopardy, and again, you have all these alarm bells going off in your head about, oh man, the schedule, this guy's clearly been banged up. He's another guy that's been blocking shots and limping around and clearly not at 100%. You know he plays through everything, but you felt like, oh man, is this finally catching up with them right now? The good news on Lindgren is that we found out, I got a text Monday late in the day that the Rangers had gotten back their results. He had been fully evaluated, and it was determined that this is no tear. This is nothing that's going to require surgery. This is nothing super, super serious. They think he's going to need a few weeks to get back healthy, and it sounds like they are definitely not going to rush him. Obviously, when you get to the playoffs, I think that's when they'd absolutely like to have him. But as far as the regular season is concerned, they're not going to rush him. I think it's going to be at least a few weeks before we see him again. We've got about a month. Pretty much exactly a month now until the playoffs start, but he avoided a worst case scenario, and they do believe that they will have him back for the playoffs. Whether that means game one of the playoffs or maybe a little bit further into the playoffs, that's to be determined. I think we need to see how he does in the next few weeks, but there's a lot of optimism from what I'm sensing right now about Lindgren being able to make it back this season. So that is a huge sigh of relief for the Rangers, because remember, they also have Jacob Trouba out right now. He's dealing with his own lower body injury. Chris Drury had told us it was going to be 2 or 3 weeks for him being out of the lineup. He's coming up on 2 weeks now. Laviolette did tell us on Tuesday that Trouba is now skating on his own, but he said we're also going to take it slow with him. They don't want to rush it. Again, I think wisely being cautious here. But Laviolette said at some point in the near future, it looks like he'll maybe get back to practicing with the team in one of those non-contact jerseys and slowly inch his way back to returning. I think you'll probably see Trouba back with the team before you see Lindgren. So that would also be a welcome sight for the Rangers, because their depth on that blue line right now is being tested. It's a little bit in flux. Although I will say that it feels to me like the Rangers defenseman depth is in a better state than probably at any time since I've been on the beat in my 5 seasons covering the team. Chad Ruedel, who they went out and gave up a fourth-round pick for to get from the Pittsburgh Penguins at the trade deadline, essentially is their eighth defenseman right now. So that's a pretty good spot, I think, for the Rangers to be in as far as the depth. Now, because of the injury to Lindgren, Ruedel's finally getting a chance to play. He made his Rangers debut in that game Tuesday against Winnipeg. We'll see how he looks. I want to see a little bit more of a sample size before I pass any judgment on exactly what they're getting in him. But the reputation on him is just a really responsible, steady, stay-at-home defensive kind of guy. So that, I think, as a plug-and-play depth kind of guy, is pretty much what you'd be looking for. So Ruedel steps in, and I think they're pretty comfortable with that. But you also have to give a lot of credit to Zach Jones, because when the news about Trouba's injury came out, I think a lot of us figured, well, they just went out and traded for Ruedel. He's a right-handed defenseman just like Trouba. He's probably going to be the guy that slots into the lineup. But no, the Rangers went six straight games making Ruedel a healthy scratch and instead leaning on Zach Jones, who probably just played his best week or had his best week as an NHL player. Now, there's not a huge sample size there either. We know he's very much been in and out of the lineup for the Rangers since he signed his entry-level contract a few years ago. Has never really had a really extended run. The longest period was to begin last season when the Rangers opened with him on that bottom pair with Braden Schneider. Got 20 or so games before it was clear that he was struggling and they weren't thrilled with what they were seeing. He talked to me at the time about overthinking and confidence kind of being shot. And I remember him saying to me, for the first time in my life, I was nervous when I had the puck. Went down to the AHL, finished the season there. And it kind of raised questions about what his future with the organization was going to be, especially when the Rangers went out and signed Erik Gustafsson, clearly to be that bottom pair left-handed guy next to Schneider. And it sort of pushed Jones out of the picture. For 45 of the first 62 games the Rangers played this season, this guy was a healthy scratch. But Laviolette, and I think this carries a lot of weight, I know for sure with Jones, but I think throughout the locker room as well, because Jones has been such a good soldier for them all season, really, I have to say, the way that he carries himself, the way that he's handled this, a really good kid. I definitely have come to respect the way that he goes about his business, not complaining about the situation that he's in. Still clearly, from what I observe all the time, working very hard and being a good team player, kind of casting his ego aside, even though he admitted to me, it's been a tough year. There have certainly been tough days for him. I'm sure it's frustrating to go such long periods of time without playing. And the other concern that I have in that situation is when a guy has basically been cast aside a little bit and the Rangers weren't going to trust him with an every night kind of a role going into training camp, and now he just hasn't played all that much for such a long period of time, those doubts, it's hard for them not to creep in when he does get forced into the lineup. And in those rare occasions when he plays, you would think there's a lot of pressure on him in those moments to say, okay, I got to make sure that I do well here because I want to prove to the team that I can stay in the lineup. So it all kind of compounds itself in that way. And given some of the confidence issues that he talked about last season, these were all things that I've kind of been thinking about this year as the season has gone on, just how would he react if he had to play for an extended period of time? And he's answered that question, I think, really well. Now, there's been some hiccups. The game in Pittsburgh, I don't think was his best game. I don't think that was the best game for a lot of people on the Rangers. But overall, this last week for Zach Jones has been really, really encouraging. Again, to me, the best hockey we've seen him play. I thought that game Sunday against the Islanders was probably his best NHL game. There was a three-on-one rush that he had to defend all by himself in the first period where I thought he was calm, poised, played the puck, didn't even allow the Islanders to get a shot off of. I think defensively, he's been good. The mobility has been clear. This is a plus skater. And I think for an undersized guy like him, he has to effectively use his legs and read plays well to defend effectively. And I think for the most part, he's done that. You've seen him engaging in puck battles. Now, again, not the biggest, strongest guy, so he's not going to win every single one of them. But I think he's been sticking his nose in there and doing a pretty good job with that. And then you're also starting to see that offensive, those puck skills start to show up more and more. Had an assist in that game against the Islanders. See him dancing along the blue line with the puck at times. There's a lot to like about that side of his game as well. So Jones, to me, is now starting to raise my antenna, and I'm sure it's this way internally as well, where you're thinking, okay, next season, he's still under contract at a very reasonable cap hit. Erik Gustafsson's going to be a free agent. Is Jones getting to the point now where the Rangers would be comfortable trusting him as an every night kind of guy for them next season? I think that's a part of this conversation for sure as well. I talked to Jones at length about this the other day, had a really good conversation with him about the headspace that he's in and how he's handling this opportunity and why he's feeling good about the way that he's playing. So if you haven't had a chance yet, go check out that story at lohud.com/sports/Rangers. But I think Jones has been one of the kind of the cool stories of this past week for the Rangers while they're dealing with injuries to guys like Trouba and Lindgren. As for the forwards, I've mostly liked what I've seen from them since the trade deadline. I think adding Wennberg and adding Roslovic has really made it feel like this lineup has kind of fallen into place. Again, the depth right now, getting more scoring out of the bottom six, that's been encouraging. I think there's been certainly flashes from Roslovic of what he's capable of on that top line with Kreider and Zibanejad. He's had, I think, 4 points in the last three or four games, and you see him using that speed. That's really the big thing with him, and I actually have a story coming on him as well. I reached out to some people from the U.S. National Development Program and other people from his past just to get a feel for exactly what he brings and also get a feel for why this guy who clearly has first-round talent, was a first-round draft pick, skill is there, speed is there. There's a lot to like about his game, but why it hasn't completely clicked at the NHL level yet for him. So I plan on having that story out sometime in the next few days. But I do think that the reasons that the Rangers targeted him and the elements that he brings to that top line with Zibanejad and Kreider, I think a lot of that stuff has been showing up already, and it seems to be improving. So I definitely think there's a lot to like about him in that spot. I think the production from Mika has been better recently, and I think Roslovic is part of that. You see him getting in there on the forecheck, sticking his nose in on puck retrievals, carrying the puck with speed in transition, all the things that I think are needed to complement Kreider and Zibanejad. So definitely some things to like about that. The Panarin line continues to hum for the most part. And again, the bottom six, now that you have Wennberg, now that you have Kako heating up, Cooley, again, to me, is a guy who's really been noticeable recently. So it feels like that bottom six is falling into place as well, at least from a depth perspective. Exactly how those bottom six guys are going to be arranged, Laviolette has been toying with that a bit recently. We've seen him make changes in the last few games. I do think there's a good chance you're going to see Rempe get back in there at some point, whether it's against Boston or whether it's against Florida, especially coming off of that loss to Winnipeg. But he's also toying with Cooley. Does he like him better on that third line with Wennberg, or does he like him better in that checking role next to Gaudreau? I think that's an interesting question that the Rangers are going to go back and forth on a little bit in the coming weeks. And I think it's kind of a good thing in some ways for Laviolette to experiment a little bit right now, because now is the time to do it. That way you feel really good about your choices as you're heading into the playoffs. Now, I'll have an update. It's the morning right now. I'm going to head to practice in a little while. So if there are any lineup changes or any kind of new news, I'll come back and mention all that stuff to begin the third segment. But right now I want to get to this week's guest. And you know what? I think I forgot to mention him at the top of this show, so I apologize. But speaking of Roslovic, I reached out to a buddy of mine, Brian Hedger, who covers the Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch, and asked him to come on this week's show to discuss exactly what the Rangers are getting in Roslovic and exactly what went down during his time in Columbus. So I'm pretty sure I forgot to mention that at the top of the show. I apologize again to Brian and to all of you for not teasing this properly, but we're going to roll into that interview now, talk a little bit about Jack Roslovic with Brian Hedger, and then after that interview, I will be back to answer this week's set of Twitter questions. Now let's welcome back into the show a guy we can start calling our Blue Jackets correspondent. He is Brian Hedger, who covers the Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. So, Brian, how are you doing? I appreciate you coming on in between baseball practice and all the other stuff you got going on over there.
Yeah, between track practice and baseball practice, it's always fun to be a dad on the run, you know?
Especially during hockey season.
Yeah, exactly, as we're wrapping up hockey season at the same time. Yeah, I was just in Detroit last night and drove back. It's only about a 3.5-hour drive from us here up to Detroit. where I'm from originally, and watched the Jackets lose another one up there last night. As far as it was their 15th game that they've blown a lead in the third period, and they fell to 2-2-11 in games when they've led in the third period, 2-2-11.
Well, they did the Red Wings a favor because the Red Wings are in that kind of all jumbled up Eastern Conference wild card race right now. And I know that those points really help them out. Whereas it looks like the Jackets are obviously not going to the playoffs again this season. And that is why they were sellers at the trade deadline. And that's where I want to go, because I think of all the trade deadline additions that the Rangers made, I mean, obviously Alex Wennberg is a guy that is playing a pretty big role for them as well. But Jack Roslovic, the player that they got from the Blue Jackets, they put him right in there on their top line. They didn't have to give up a whole lot to get him, only sending a conditional fourth round pick over to Columbus. And I think Rangers fans are really curious about exactly what they're getting in this guy. I know he came to Columbus, I think, about 3.5 years ago, in the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade, I believe, from the Winnipeg Jets. So you got to watch him for quite a bit of time. Like I said, it was 3.5 seasons. So I just wanted to have you on to kind of pick your brain about what exactly are the Rangers getting in this guy, and what did you, I guess, pick up on him during his time in Columbus and his tenure there?
Yeah, it's an it he's been an interesting case study. I think the key the word that would fit with him and his time in Columbus would be enigma. There were times when, Jack Roslovic, when he was clicking and he had everything going, I mean, he was a very, very clear top six forward, legitimate top six forward with really, really impressive, not only speed. I mean, he's very, he can definitely burn, as a skater, but he's an intricate skater. Like he uses his edges very well. He can really spin around and get into some of those tight turns and things like that, and use that to, kind of get himself open or get himself away from pressure and things like that. But then you combine it, he also has, there are times when he has vision where you're like, wow, he's like a point guard. And he also has good hands. And one thing I think Blue Jackets fans would have liked to see more out of him and Alex Wennberg, another former Blue Jacket, was the shot. They both have good shots and, wrist shots, and they don't take them as enough. I mean, that's just call it what it is. They don't take the shot enough because they both can shoot the puck. You say all that and you think you're describing, just a star player in the league. And the thing with Jack was that it was just up and down. And there was a lot of times in Columbus when, he just he wasn't it just wasn't an impact player, and should have been, and they needed him to be, and he just wasn't. And it's hard to be consistent in the NHL. He was, I don't know, he was interesting because he came home. He's from Columbus. So when Jack came back, everyone thought he was going to be thrilled to be here, and it just didn't really seem like he was all the time. And I think that he knew he was going to get traded by the end of it, and became kind of more philosophical about it, about his career. So I think he's taking the right attitude to New York, right? Like, I think after spending 3.5 years here and not the team not being competitive at all, when he was here, I think that he's starting to realize he's not a young guy anymore. He's 27, 28 years old. And I think, like a lot of hockey players, he wants to win. And he's starting to realize, I think he started to realize what they had in Winnipeg, and it was how different it was, than what we have in Columbus right now. And so I think that Jack's taken an attitude to New York of, hey, this is a shot to try and win a Stanley Cup here. And I don't know what he's gonna, and also he's a pending free agent. He's a pending unrestricted free agent this summer. So if the Rangers don't re-sign him, he's free to walk and find another opportunity somewhere. So he's playing for that as well. And not unlike Max Domi a couple of years ago when the Jackets traded him at the deadline to Carolina. and you know, he tried to, you know, help them out in the postseason. So yeah, I mean, I think you're getting the best case scenario for the Rangers. You're getting a motivated Jack Roslovic who's got all those skill set, you know, that I mentioned at the start.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of an interesting point in this conversation. Like, people that I've talked to about him in the last few weeks, and I've talked to people from the levels where he played with the U.S. National Development Program up until pro scouts and everything in between, and people have talked a lot about what you said, the inconsistencies, that it comes in flashes where you see the high-end skill, where you see the speed, where you see this enticing tool set, but then it doesn't stick. It kind of comes and goes. And what I think the Rangers are hopeful for, and I think you just touched on, is if you look at the lead up to the trade deadline, I think he had 13 points in his last 12 games with the Jackets. He talked openly when he got here about knowing that there was a high likelihood that he would be traded. And I think that that maybe in some ways fueled him. You talked about the pending free agency. And I think what all that adds up to is the Rangers getting a guy at a point where maybe, instead of it being a cold spell for him, you're going to get one of those high, hot flashes where he's highly motivated, the motor is running high, and he could click for them at a very reasonable price tag for what they ended up sending to Columbus for him.
Well, for sure. And now, so he's on the top line, and that means he's not playing with Panarin, though, right?
No, he's with Zibanejad and Kreider.
That's right. And he's on the right side. I mean, you know, here's the thing. Like, it's a short-term type of relationship right now for him. Like, they don't have Jack signed for 5 years or more, whatever, and they have to worry about the ups and downs. They only have to get a motivated Jack Roslovic from the now to the end of the regular season and then into the playoffs. If they can get that, and they can keep him, you know, locked in and focused and productive, I mean, that's a heck of a pickup at the deadline. And, you know, he's a guy, like, he's got a reputation too, right? Like, he's gotten this reputation as a guy who kind of pouts when things don't go his way, and he doesn't, you know, like, for here, the first couple of years, he thought he was supposed to be the first line center here. Didn't really get a ton of opportunity to do it, but then when he did, it didn't go well, you know, so he's back out of the role again, and I think he was unhappy about it. Like, there was a lot of that kind of stuff. excuse me, but this is a whole different situation that we're talking about here. Like, he's in a playoff run now, you know, and one of the things that he said to me, and it's one of the things I'll remember about him here, it was right near the end before he got traded. And I remember we were just kind of talking one day, and he basically said, he goes, you know, coming to Columbus basically for, was it 3.5 years and not winning, it kind of opened his eyes and made him realize, like, the experience that he had gotten in Winnipeg to start his career. Because I think that sometimes you need to leave a place to be able to and go somewhere else to kind of, appreciate what maybe you had before, right? And so Winnipeg has always been one of these teams that, like, they're doing it again. You look at that team and you're like, well, I mean, if they did make a deep run in the playoffs, would anybody be surprised? They're big, they're veteran, they play with a lot of desperation, that kind of thing. And so one of the things he said to me was, when I was in Winnipeg, he goes, like, basically the entire attitude there from top to bottom throughout the entire organization is win or die. Like, win or die. That's it. You know, like, if you don't win, like, you could be out of there the next year, because that's all they're about is winning. There's nothing else. And, you know, I don't think he fully realized that maybe when he was there. And then it really sunk home, you know, spending 3.5 years, not even close to the playoffs. And now he's going to New York and the Rangers are right at the top. And here you are again. Maybe he's bringing that attitude, win or die, to New York.
You know, with him, it sounds like there's a lot to like if he's playing highly motivated. I'm curious, from your standpoint, I mean, are there concerns? Are there drawbacks? Are there parts of his game that maybe you question as far as him being a legitimate top line winger on a team that fancies itself as a Stanley Cup contender?
Well, I guess the yeah, there would be the thing that jumps out to me, and I think where he falls into trouble sometimes as a player on, you know, in games and whatnot, is that he does have a tendency to kind of hang around the perimeter too much, you know, and use that speed where it looks like sometimes it looks like he's a Olympic speed skater or something, where he's just kind of going around the oval and doesn't go into the hard areas a ton. Gotta get my son's bag out of there. sorry about that. So I think he just kind of falls into that sometimes. Now, when he's being most productive, and I haven't had a chance to really watch his games much, you know, with the Rangers yet, but I know he's gotten some points and he's on that top line. But when he is at his best, it's when he's willing to go to those hard areas and, you know, use his skill set from there and, you know, send shots, send passes, you know, in front of the net, into the slot, you know, find teammates that way, willing to take a hit to make a play, those kind of things. There are times when he is willing to do that. And when he does, he's productive. And so I think that it's not just him either. There's a lot of players around this league. When you look around and really watch them and watch their games, I think it's easier to kind of fall into those bad habits of, you know, not getting to the most productive areas and then sort of not becoming invisible, but just not having the impact that you want to have. And so I think he's starting to figure that out now. And if that's the player the Rangers get, I mean, my goodness, they may have just gotten a big steal at the deadline. But if he falls back into the inconsistencies and really not, you'll know, because you're gonna see games where you're like, I didn't notice Rozovic at all in this game, and then the coach is gonna move him down the lineup, and he'll be in like third line or fourth line. That's kind of the thing that happened here quite a bit. But when he was locked in here, the guy was really productive. So I'll be watching for that, you know, as the playoffs begin, especially.
All right, Brian. Well, I got to thank you so much for taking the time in between these rides to these various practices. We definitely appreciate you squeezing us in. Definitely some good insight on Roslovic in particular. And I really do appreciate you coming on the show. I'm sure we'll connect again somewhere down the line. But enjoy the rest of your season and enjoy what looks like it could be a long summer for you. Hopefully you'll get some good time with the family, some golf, whatever it is you like to do for that free time.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll probably see you out there. They haven't officially announced the draft yet, have they? But everyone thinks it's going to be at the Sphere, right, in Vegas?
Yes, that's what it sounds like. It will be at the Sphere, yeah.
All right. So, yeah, we'll probably see you at the Sphere. And, you know, don't be a stranger. And anytime you need to hear or want to talk about former Blue Jackets who are now Rangers or anything like that, just give me a call.
Yeah, we seem to have a lot of crossover for some reason with that stuff. But, yeah, thanks again, Brian.
All right. We'll talk to you.
All right, and we are back. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, if you have not had enough Jack Roslovic talk so far, I will have a new story coming out. It's looking more like next week with some insight into the player, his history, and what it is that the Rangers like about him, why they felt like he was worth taking a chance on to bring in and play in that top line spot. And as I mentioned earlier, what's been kind of fascinating for me to learn more about is that this is a guy who has a history of playing with some really high-end players, having spent some time with the U.S. National Development Program playing on the same line with Austin Matthews and Matthew Tkachuk. So there's some really interesting history there, I think. And the more that I've learned about him, the more that I can kind of connect a lot of the dots and understand why, for the Rangers, this is a guy, especially at that price point, who made a lot of sense. So thank you to Brian for taking a little time to chat more about Jack today. And now we will shift to this week's set of Twitter questions. And we will start with AJNY21, who wrote, Who do you think is more the 13th man in the playoffs, Rempe or Brodzinski? Meaning, whose spot is it to lose as of right now? Also, any reason Cooley has been swapping between the third and fourth line? I think he matches a bit more than VC with Kako and Wenberg. Well, there's a lot to unpack there, AJ, and actually this works out perfect because I had mentioned in the first segment that I was heading to practice. I am now back from practice, and I have some updates on a few of those things that you asked about. So first off, with Rempe and Brodzinski. When Rempe was first eligible to come out of his suspension and back into the lineup Tuesday in that game against Winnipeg, Laviolette chose not to stick him right back in there. And some people I saw were speculating that maybe that was sort of sending a message to Rempe, or maybe that he had lost a little bit of faith in him because of the hit that resulted in the suspension. And I do think that certainly there has been some conversation behind the scenes about avoiding hits like that and not putting yourself in that position, not hurting the team in that way with unnecessary penalties, not risking injury to other players, all those sorts of things. But I don't think it was necessarily any kind of a message. I think it was much more about the fact the Rangers played really well Sunday against the Islanders. Johnny Brodzinski scored a goal in that game. It was one of his best games, I think, probably his best game since Rempe went out and he had to come back in the lineup for him. And so I think Laviolette just wanted to roll the same guys out there. He felt like that lineup had earned another go at it. And now that they didn't play as well against the Jets, it looks like we're going to have a few more changes. Now, he made a lot of changes in that third period. I don't think any of that stuff that we saw when they were kind of just searching for a spark at the end of that game against the Jets is going to stick. But what we did see at Wednesday's practice is that Rempe is back in on the fourth line, skating at right wing next to VC and Gaudreau, and it looks like Johnny Brodzinski will go back to being a healthy scratch. In fact, after practice, I noticed Laviolette took some time on the ice to pull Brodzinski aside and have a chat with him. I'm sure that was words of encouragement and communication going on there, Laviolette letting him know that he was making this decision and why he was making this decision. So Rempe is coming back into the lineup. And I do believe that right now, if I was kind of handicapping this as far as who's most likely to be the 12th forward, the last guy in the lineup once we get to the playoffs, I still think that Rempe has a bit of an edge. Now, it's going to come down to, in these next 13 games, I don't think he's going to play all of them. I mentioned earlier that Laviolette said he's going to have some kind of a rotation going to keep guys fresh and make sure that nobody gets too cold. So I don't think Rempe's playing all 13 of these games, but I think he'll play in a lot of them. And I think what the Rangers are going to want to see is him continuing to hone his skills, him continuing to make that positive impact that we've talked about before, where he's hammering the opposing team on the forecheck, where he's winning all those puck battles, where he's gaining extra possessions for the Rangers, where he's getting to those gritty areas on the ice and making a difference with all the different physical elements that he brings at 6'8" with that penchant that we've seen for throwing his body around and making hits that clearly change the momentum of a game, and of course fighting when necessary. The Rangers really love all of that about him, and they think he's a plus skater. They think that his hands are a little bit underrated. They think that his defense is getting better. I mean, a lot of these things are still work in progress, but I think the Rangers have liked a lot of what they've seen within the flow of the game so far from Rempe. But what the true test is going to be is making sure that, as Rempe said today when we talked to him, that he toes that line without crossing it. Because the hit that happened against the Devils where he injured Siegenthaler and got suspended for it, everybody is in agreement that that was over the line. Now, what Laviolette has said and what Rempe reiterated today is that he didn't have intent to harm Siegenthaler on that. He was not purposely trying to elbow him in the head. Obviously, that's what happened. Nobody's denying that. But what Rempe and Laviolette have both explained is that if you watch that play, Siegenthaler pulls up and Rempe is about to crash into the boards. So he said that he was raising his arms in an attempt to brace for impact as he was about to hit the boards. Now, I do think that that is a plausible explanation. I do not doubt that he wasn't purposely trying to concuss Siegenthaler or purposely trying to elbow him in the head. But obviously the result of the play is the result of the play. And that's why it's illegal. That's why it warranted a suspension. It warranted some kind of discipline. You could argue whether four games was the right call or not. It seems a little harsh, especially for a first-time offender. But at the same time, it's clear to me that the league has had its eye on Rempe. He's been causing quite a stir with all the fighting and all the hits and everything like that. And maybe this is a little bit of a message to him early on saying, hey, we're watching you closely. You can't be doing stuff like that. So I'm sure that there was an element of that as well. But I do believe and take at face value the explanation there. It's just a matter of you still have to have control of your own body. And Rempe talked about that today. He said, I have to stay compact, can't be raising my arms and my elbows like that. And as long as he stays compact and has good technique and good form on these hits. Now, he's a big guy, and we've seen before sometimes his shoulder or even the lower part of his arm is eye level with some of the smaller opponents that he's going to run into. And that's kind of just unfortunately going to come with the territory at times, I think. But as long as he's staying compact, as long as his form is good and he's not raising any limbs unnecessarily, I think that the Rangers will be pleased with that. And I think that that will increase his chances of staying in the lineup. And Laviolette even pointed out today when I asked him about all the penalty minutes, a large majority of those penalty minutes come from fighting, which Laviolette seems to understandably put in a different category. As far as his penalties within the flow of the game, you know, a trip, a hook, an interference, things of that nature, elbowing, obviously, there haven't been a ton of those. There's been some of them, obviously, but Laviolette says he thinks he's played a pretty disciplined game in that regard. And as long as he can maintain that and not take costly penalties, then I think his chances of sticking in the lineup, as long as all those other things, the forechecking and the digging pucks out and the getting to the front of the net and defending really hard and using his long reach and his skating, all those things, as long as he continues to make positive impacts in those areas without hurting the team from an illegal checking or penalty standpoint, then I think because he brings a different look to this lineup that made them feel just more physically imposing, like they were playing with more vigor in the games that he was in there for, I think the Rangers really value having that in the lineup. And I would give him an edge. Again, he's going to have to prove in these next handful of games that he can do that without crossing the line. That's really the big test for him right now. But I think if the Rangers had to decide today, I think they would really value having him in the lineup, as long as he continues to show that he is more than just a face puncher, that he is developing into, I don't know if I want to say a complete hockey player, but a hockey player who can function well within the role that they want him to play, that fourth line checking kind of role. So I do believe that right now Rempe would have the edge and Brodzinski would likely be the odd man out, the 13th forward, the first guy in the event of either injury or Laviolette deciding that they need to change things up. As for Cooley and his place in the lineup, it is interesting because I do think that if you're talking about a classic checking line, Cooley fits really well in a role like that. And a line with Cooley, Gaudreau, and Rempe looks to me like a line that would be pretty intimidating for another team to face. But I also do think that Cooley, with his skill, and this is a guy who's very capable of scoring, and increasingly so recently, I think, has been popping more offensively. I think he's been more noticeable on the offensive side of things lately. This is a guy who clearly, I think, can play on a third line type of spot with Wennberg and Kako. And I think that those three have been more effective when Cooley's out there versus when VC's out there. And that looks like the way that Laviolette is leaning right now, because that's the way that they skated for Wednesday's practice, and it looks like that's how they'll line up for Thursday's game in Boston. So it does look like Cooley will be on the third line with Wennberg and Kako, and that would mean VC, Gaudreau, and Rempe is the fourth line. Right now, that looks like the best option. That looks like Laviolette's preferred way to go, But I do think that you might see a little more tweaking here and there. You could see some more experimentation. And there is an argument that VC has some skill in his game as well and could probably play with Wennberg and Kako if needed, if he wants to make that fourth line just a little heavier as far as the physicality that Cooley brings. So he might go back and forth on that. But right now it's Cooley on the third line and VC on the fourth line. All right, let's get to our next question, which comes from Ryan O'Hare, who wrote, can you see Lavi wanting to keep Schneider and Miller together even after Trouba comes back? This has been a very popular question recently. I answered this in a mailbag that I wrote last week as well, but I definitely wanted to address it here because I do think, for the most part, that pair has been good. Now, two of the last three games were not their best. The game in Pittsburgh, I think the defense as a whole was pretty sloppy. And again, in that game against Winnipeg, I know Schneider ended up as a minus two, although one of those goals certainly had nothing to do with him. It was more the Kreider turnover. But we did see in the third period that Laviolette broke them up and actually ended up playing Miller with Fox, which we've talked about that potential pairing before on the podcast, and I find that really intriguing. I know a lot of fans find that really intriguing. I was curious to see whether Laviolette would consider playing Miller with Fox for that game in Boston. Now, based on practice, it looks like he's going to go back to the way that it was, meaning Miller and Schneider and then Fox playing with Erik Gustafsson. So it looks like he wants to keep rolling with the Schneider-Miller pair because I think prior to the weekend, those guys had strung a few really good games together in a row. Keandre Miller has been a beast recently. To me, in a lot of ways, he's been the Rangers' best all-around defenseman. Since Trouba went out, I think he's really accepted the challenge of sort of being the alpha male on that pair, which has been used very much so as the Rangers' matchup pair. Schneider and Miller have been getting a lot of the toughest assignments, if you've been paying attention, in a lot of these recent games. So Laviolette is leaning on them heavily right now. And I think for the most part, those two guys have responded well. I think Schneider has really looked pretty good out there for the most part recently too. Again, last couple games, two out of three, I think were not his best. But prior to that, he was playing really well. Also, I thought he played well in that game against the Islanders. So there's been a lot to like about Schneider recently. And in some ways, you could look at it, and if you see the two young guys thriving and playing with confidence and seeming to relish in having that added responsibility on their plate, which is definitely the sense that I've gotten from talking to both of those guys recently, Miller seems as confident as he's been all year. He seems to be in a really good place after we know earlier in the season he was dealing with some off-the-ice stuff and took a little time away and wasn't thrilled with the way that he was playing. To me, guy seems like he's in a really good place right now, and I think it's showing on the ice. You still have those occasional hiccups. I think those turnovers that seem to be very loud happen almost on a nightly basis with him, and you'd love to see him cut down on that a little more. I do think it's been better recently, but I also think because of his high upside, because of the aggressive way that he plays the game when he's at his best, that some of that is just going to kind of come with the territory. And quite frankly, of all the defensemen on this team, because of his athletic gifts, he is the most capable of making up for his mistakes. You know, he can hunt guys down and back check really hard and get back and defend when those turnovers do happen. And otherwise, I mean, if you just look at the way that he's closing things down in the defensive zone, you look at the way that he's moving when he has the puck on his stick, you look at the way that he's attacking off the rush and making himself more of an offensive threat recently. There's just a lot of things that I like about the way that he's moving and playing right now. So again, I think you could make an argument that, hey, those guys are playing well together. Maybe they should stick together, but not separating them would in all likelihood mean playing Trouba on the bottom pair with Gustafsson. And I just do not see, quite frankly, Laviolette going down that road with his captain, with a guy who I know he has a tremendous amount of respect for. And the reality is this, Trouba has taken some knocks from the fans, and at times rightly so. Last year was far from his best. I thought last year was kind of a rough season for him, especially if you look at the goals allowed that he was on the ice for. But this season, those numbers are all much better. And I think he has been a more effective player. And you also know that when it comes to playoff time and the ice is going to get tighter and the Rangers are going to want to ramp up the physicality, We just talked about Matt Rempe and what he brings from a physical standpoint and with the hits and everything. But Jacob Trouba might be the best body checker in the game. And I think the Rangers are absolutely going to want him to log some important minutes where he has a chance of making those momentum-altering plays, where he's going to be a guy who's roaming around and a presence that the other team has to constantly be aware of. So I think that that's an element that the Rangers are going to want more of in the playoffs, not less. So I just don't see it happening. I would be very surprised, assuming that Trouba and Lindgren are both healthy for the playoffs. Trouba, I think, again, is closer than Lindgren. It's possible the Rangers could start the playoffs and not have Lindgren available. And then if that were the case, it would be kind of interesting to talk about what they're going to do with the D pairs, because then you're going to have probably Gustafson and Jones in the lineup. I think Gustafson, they trust a little bit more to play further up in the lineup. So you would have Jones on the bottom pair, maybe with Schneider. And then you'd probably be looking at Fox and Gustafson, Miller and Trouba would be my best guess. But if Lindgren's back and healthy, I think you're going to see what we typically always see. You're going to see Lindgren and Fox, and you're going to see Trouba and Miller, and then you're going to see Gustafson and Schneider. I think those are the pairs that everybody is most comfortable with. I think if you ask the players what they prefer, that's what they would all say as well, especially those top four guys, meaning Miller, Trouba, Fox, Lindgren. They very much enjoy playing with each other. They are very comfortable playing with each other. And I think Laviolette is comfortable with that arrangement as well. So the odds are that that's what we're going to see. Things could change in the coming weeks. I mean, if Miller and Schneider are just taking it even a level higher and just keep getting better and better and better and better and better to the point where you just can't deny it, maybe that would force Laviolette's hand, but I don't see that happening. I think Trouba will absolutely be one of their top four defensemen whenever he's healthy enough to play. And that would almost surely mean Schneider getting bumped down to the lineup, because you know Adam Fox isn't getting bumped down in the lineup. Your top two right-handed defensemen are almost surely going to be Fox and Trouba, and that means Schneider's probably bumping back down. Miller's staying in the top four, no doubt about it, but Schneider's the guy who probably gets bumped down once Trouba comes back. All right, let's get to our final question, which comes from Jeff Weinstein, who wrote, "There is a fascinating debate going on about which is better for the Rangers, to win the Metro and play the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, or finish second and play Philly or Washington instead. I would also throw the Islanders into that mix, Jeff, although I know they haven't been playing great recently. I know they lost to the Rangers over the weekend. But what you have in the Metro in particular is the Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes look very formidable. They both look like legitimate contenders to come out of the Eastern Conference. And after that, you have a significant drop-off. You have some flawed teams that I think would probably be the underdog in almost any first-round series that they would play. The order of how they will finish is still to be determined. But whether you're talking about the Flyers, whether you're talking about the Capitals, or whether you're talking about the Islanders, I think all three of those teams feel at least very beatable. So from that standpoint, if we are strictly talking about matchups, to me, on the outside looking in, I would much rather play one of those three teams than having to face the Lightning. We talked about the Lightning in the first segment. We talked about what we saw when the Rangers went to Tampa and lost to them on Thursday night last week. The Lightning, you could talk about them aging, although I think some of that's even overblown, because you look at their key players, like Braden Point is 28 years old. Kucherov is 30 years old. Vasilevsky is 29 years old. These are not really old, old players. I mean, the Rangers in their core of Panarin, who's 32, and Kreider, who's 32, and Zibanejad, who's about to be 31. I mean, some of those guys are even a little bit older. So I think the Lightning being old is a little bit overblown. I mean, Victor Hedman, I think, is like 33 now, but he's still a very high-quality defenseman. The star power is all there. And that is really what scares you, I think, about the Lightning, is you know that they have these guys who are among the top players in the game at their position and have the track record of winning multiple cups. I think what the Lightning don't have is maybe as much depth as they had during those runs to back-to-back cup finals, which is why they're a little further down in the standings than they had been at the time when they were winning those cups. But to me, when I look at the Eastern Conference, I see six teams that I think are legitimate contenders to varying degrees. But these are the six teams who I think if they went on a run in the Eastern Conference playoffs, nobody would be surprised about. And that would be the Rangers, the Hurricanes, the Bruins, the Panthers, the Maple Leafs. People might laugh about that, but they do have a good, very talented team, and the Lightning. Again, varying degrees there. I think Rangers, Panthers, Hurricanes, Bruins are the clear top four. And then the next tier is going to be Maple Leafs and Lightning. But after those top six, I think there's a significant drop off. And that's when you're talking about the Flyers, the Islanders, the Capitals, the Red Wings. Even if you want to consider the Sabres and the Devils, who are still kind of hanging around a little bit in the playoff race there. But all those teams, I think, are clearly a couple notches below. So, yes, for us as fans, for me as a reporter, to sit here and say, wow, Tampa's definitely a more favorable matchup, or less favorable matchup, that's completely valid, I believe. But it's interesting because this topic kind of came up with Laviolette today. And what I sense from hearing this from Laviolette today, and even from talking to players over the years, they are so hyper-focused on winning every game, collecting as many points as they can throughout the season. Laviolette was asked about the importance of beating Boston on Thursday night. And he was saying, obviously, this opponent is a test and they're aware of that. And trust me, within the walls of the locker room, they know which teams are going to be more challenging than others when they're gearing up to play someone. But for them, the focus is always just doing what you can to win that game. They are much more focused on process over standings. So they want to win 2 points. They want to play well that night because they know that they're gearing up for the playoffs. They know that being sharp, being on top of their game at this time of year is important. So every game, that's what they're striving for. And to do that, you want to beat the opponent that's in front of you. And that's going to result in collecting as many points as you can. So Laviolette said today, of course I want these 2 points. Just like I want the 2 points on Saturday against Florida. Just like I'm going to want the 2 points next Tuesday against Philly. That is what they are hyper-focused on. But I think as far as the standings go, Laviolette said today, we don't set goals as far as we want to be the number one overall seed in the East or we want to win the division. If that happens, that's great. That's an accomplishment. But even I remember Trocheck saying this a couple days ago. That's not the kind of thing that I think they talk about a lot within these meetings or within the walls of the locker room. For them, it's just about collecting as many points as you can, playing as well as you can. Again, process over results is really what I think they are hyper-focused on in there. And of course, if you do that, then you're going to end up high up in the standings and you're going to roll with it. I also think that there's a sentiment from the coaches and from the players that they don't get too hyper-focused on who they're going to match up against, who they're going to play, because they feel like if they are going to accomplish their ultimate goal, which is winning the Stanley Cup, they're going to have to take on all comers. They're going to have to face whoever's in front of them. So I think for them, I really do believe that genuinely they don't pay a whole lot of attention to what the matchups are. And like Laviolette said today, it's not like I'm going to look at it and say, oh, well, we're in first place now, but if we go to second place, it'll be a better matchup. So maybe we should lose a few games. I think, especially in the hockey world, how competitive these guys are, that you're very, very, very rarely going to find a situation where they're okay with losing a game. So from that standpoint, I think that the Rangers are not too worried about it, is the sense that I get. It's a fun thing to talk about for sure. I think it's an interesting debate to have. And again, for me, if you're asking for my honest opinion of those teams that are in that wild card mix right now, the Lightning are the one hands down that I do not want to see. And if the Rangers finish in first place in the Metro Division, it looks very likely that it would be the Lightning, because the Lightning are creating some distance between themselves and the other wild card teams. And then you look at the number one seed, the race for the number one seed in the East. Boston is 3 points up on the Rangers right now, although the Rangers have a game in hand. So it's not inconceivable that the Rangers could move into that first overall spot in the conference. And if the Rangers were to do that, well, then they would be looking at the second wild card team, which as of today, is the Detroit Red Wings, but actually the Capitals have a better points percentage. So that second wild card could be a variety of teams. It could be the Red Wings. It could be the Capitals. It could be the Islanders. It could be the Flyers. And all of those teams, I think, are certainly pretty favorable first-round matchups. So maybe you could look at it from that standpoint. The best thing for the Rangers to do is get the number one overall seed in the conference, secure home ice advantage throughout the playoffs, and set yourself up to play the worst of the two wildcard teams. That would be the ideal scenario for them. If that doesn't happen, then could you sit here and say, yeah, they'd be better off finishing in second place because it's a better matchup? Sure, you could say that, but I do not think that that is a conversation that penetrates the walls of the locker room very much, and I certainly do not get the sense that Peter Laviolette is thinking too much about that. They're focused on the task at hand, and that's going to be trying to beat Boston on Thursday night. So we can continue to talk about this. I'm sure we will continue to talk about this, but I don't think the Rangers are sitting there and saying, all right, let's lose a few games to make sure that we get the matchup that we want. So with all of that being said, I think that's a good place to wrap up this week's episode and get myself ready for the rest of my day, which includes a little birthday get together for my sister-in-law. So I do want to make sure I'm on time for that. I want to say thank you to Brian Hedger for taking the time to come on the show this week. I want to say thank you to all of you who listen and especially all of you who submitted questions. Got rapid fire games still coming up. Got Boston, got Florida, got Philly coming up. I'll be back with a new episode again next week after we get through a few more of these games. We're inching closer and closer to the playoffs, people. So that's another thing that we'll continue to look ahead to and preview and get excited about. But in the meantime, I want to wish everybody a great rest of your week, a great weekend, and I will talk to you all next week.